Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to another exciting and tantalizing episode of Slamfire Radio, where Owen is dashingly handsome, Matt makes stupid jokes, and Trevor is, hey look, a rock.
Yeah, that's good.
That is funny. See, right now I should go off on a squirrel and Trevor should tell a stupid joke.
That's right.
Oh, crap, I just told a stupid joke.
But I'm just sitting here being handsome, so that's all right.
Well, and you certainly do have a face for radio. Could you hold it up to the microphone a little closer?
Oh, too loud, too loud, too loud. Turn that thing down.
Oh, yes. So, episode 32. And joining this week, we have Luke Giroux.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Luke. How you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure, really. And Luke's going to be...
It's certainly not his.
No. It's ours, though. As a collective group, we're happy you're here, but individually, none of us could really care less.
No, especially since he won that Daniel Defense rifle.
Yeah, we're basically all just jealous, and I bet you it shoots better groups than my AR, doesn't it?
I honestly can say it depends on the guy behind the rifle.
Oh, not mine.
And I need more practice.
And, Matthew, it also depends on whether or not the Nick Star scope that he bought actually has the lenses locked in place or not.
Oh,
yeah, that helps. That helps.
That's a story for what he did this weekend shooting, I'm sure.
Yeah, pretty much, Luke. We just had an empty spot with no guest and had to fill it. So
I completely understand.
The country's big, but we thought, hey, why not call up a New Brunswicker?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, why don't you tell us what you've been shooting with guns this week?
This week, I'll count in last weekend. Went hunting on Saturday. I do the same type of hunting Matthew does, which is basically...
Yeah. I'm not alone!
No, you're not alone. Actually, I'm thinking that I may be channeling you. When I'm out in the woods, and I have to stop doing that because I'm not seeing anything. this weekend I did see some stuff, but not lucky enough to get any of it. So it was a nice long walk, but I actually ended up finding a really nice place for deer hunting for next fall because I stepped in a whole lot of deer sign. It was, so I, of course, marked that place in the GPS to make sure I go back to the exact same spot next year and hopefully get a deer there since I can't get any rabbit or anything else. Other than that, there was the scope, the Nick Star scope that Trevor's talking about, which I played with at the range. Turns out that the reason the scope was all foggy is because the objective lenses were floating freely.
It's a new feature.
Yeah, free-floating scope lenses. You thought free-floating barrels were all the rage. Nah,
exactly.
Nah.
Where a sneeze can literally adjust your parallax. It's not the greatest. So, that was my Saturday night, actually, in front of the TV, watching a movie with my wife, have a scope in about 20 pieces, trying to figure out where everything goes.
Did you get it back together?
I did put everything back together, exactly where everything went, and now it's just the job of adjusting the parallax to the proper spot.
That's cool.
I believe that somebody may have taken it apart before I received it.
No, it was never touched. Oh, did you get that from Trevor?
Oh. Yeah.
That's funny. Remember that night we dropped it on the floor?
Twice.
Yeah.
Turns out it's not microwavable.
That would actually explain some of the marks I saw, I'm sure.
There you go.
But I actually put all the parts back to where they were supposed to be, and I just need to adjust a few things there now. So that was part of the weekend. And then Sunday at the range with my daughter, had her sitting on one of the tables, eating her Timbits and drinking her chocolate milk and watching me try to sight in a scope.
I saw those pictures. That was pretty cute.
Yeah, she likes coming
around. Pink safety glasses.
Yeah, those are thanks to the packing and pink
packing
table.
And pink. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. I got her some pink shooting glasses and some earmuffs that are about 10 times too big. And she sat there patiently eating her Timbits and drinking her chocolate milk and waiting for Dad to be done. And then this week exactly. And this week I actually got a little bit of shopping done. I was telling Matt earlier, I just bought a Rimfire scope yesterday. I think it's a cheap scope, but it looks nice.
Is this the one you told me about earlier today by text message that you bought a Canadian Tire for $100?
That's the one, yeah. That's the one. I had some time to kill, so I went shopping at one of the Canadian Tires that has an outfitter in it. And they had some scopes on for sale. So I had to look around, and I saw that for $100, and it has a whole bunch of features on it that I don't know how to use, so I figured,
tell the listeners what it is, because it's not that bad of a scope.
Okay, it's a BSA Suite 22. It's a 3x9 with a 40mm objective, and it's got a really nice 3-inch sunshade on it, which can come in handy for sure. You've got, of course, your regular knobs. You've got a bullet.
Yeah, that's us three. We've introduced ourselves, though. So.
Exactly.
Or irregular knobs.
You're the special knobs. It's got something that I've never used before, which is a bullet weight compensator. So being that it is for a Rimfire, of course, the bullet weights don't vary very much, but there's a compensator in there for it. There's also a parallax turret, which is nice. You can adjust for different ranges. So being that most of the time, like Matt mentioned before, he's an iron sight shooter, I'm pretty much the same way. I'm getting used to the scope stuff. This is going to be something to play with at the range for sure. So it's going to be spending many hundreds of rounds of 22.
Only hundreds?
Well,
that's like 40 minutes for me.
It's starting to get cold.
Yeah, that's true. Once it starts to get cold, your shooting tends to speed up a little bit.
Yeah, it tends
get her zeroed and get home. Have some hot chocolate.
Yeah. And I guess that was pretty much it, except for actually, I don't know if I talk about this now or not, but my website went live yesterday.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
Is that for later?
Okay. That's for later, yeah.
Okay, not a problem. And in that case, that is all I've done with guns this week.
Awesome. Well, that was good. You fixed a crappy scope that I sold you. Super.
Yeah, it was fun, actually. I love doing that stuff.
That's what I did with that KSG, too. crappy shotgun that he sold me.
As long as you both realize they were crappy before you got them, not after, or something, or I didn't do the crappiness. That's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I've run that gun all year and never had a problem with it.
Yeah. Well, it just had to be broken in. I mean, what did I put 100 rounds through it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that I've even put that many through it either, though. But.
Yeah.
And I was pretty certain that when you offered to attach a scope onto my DDM4 for a very small fee, it probably wasn't that great.
I used it a lot on the 10/22 because I sold the scope that was on the 10/22 to Matthew, I think for a case of beer, wasn't it, Matt?
I believe, yes, it was something along those lines.
And ordered that one off of eBay, threw it on the 10/22, and shot it on my STI for a little while, but not enough to talk about. So it could have been loosening up the whole time, and I never noticed. I don't know. But like I said, if it doesn't work for you, we'll make it right.
No worries.
Yeah. So I guess that brings me to me, and I didn't do anything. Well, I shouldn't say that. I went for a walk on Monday, I believe it was. Very shortly with my rifle, and no, it couldn't have been Monday. It must have been Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. Anyway,
whatever. A week, a day.
It was sometime in the last 200, 365 days. And yeah, I was deer hunting, didn't see any, and I gave up. I threw in the towel, waved the white flag, came home, put my gun in the safe, and that's it. Even though there's still an entire week of deer season. Well, not now, but there was at the time. Pretty much gave up because I knew I wasn't going to have the time to spend on it. So,
well, that's too bad. I'm disappointed
deer list
you
for
didn't.
Year.
Yeah.
What about Random Dave? Did he bag a deer?
Nope. He's been hunting faithfully twice a day, every day. So he goes out before light in the morning, goes out till, you know, right after dark, or however long it takes him to walk back to his vehicle in the evening, every day.
Nothing, huh?
Yeah. He said he'd never seen the like of it for traffic and people and dumbness.
Dumbness?
He used other words, but yeah, he said it's just really been ridiculous this year. So.
Crazy.
Yep. So anyway, Trevor, I'm sure you have a few things to talk about.
A couple. Try and go through it quickly. I went out with Paul Furlott, the listener from Ottawa. He was back in town, so we went out and shot my AR-15s, and then we did a little bit of pistol shooting, brought out my STI Eagle and my Tanfoglio. And he can shoot. He can shoot really, really well. He took my STI, or not my STI, rather, but my Tanfoglio Stock 3. And it was the first time shooting it with the fiber optic sight that Thomas Donnelly sent me. And without any adjustments, he was piling them in one on top of the other in one jagged hole at 10 yards. It was nice to see. I couldn't do it with the Tanfoglio, but I did the same thing with the STI Eagle. I love that gun. It's so comfortable. It fits my hands so well. And then Paul left, but before he left, he handed over a pre-64 Winchester 3030 Model 94. I did some research on the serial number last night. If I recall correctly, it's a 1956. Pretty rough shape on the outside. I'm going to get it refinished. Just some light surface rust and the wood here and there. I rubbed it all down with Ballistol and just that with a wet rag. Cleaned it up quite a bit. So he's not sure if he's going to sell it to me yet, but he said I could borrow it for as long as I want, basically until he's ready to take it back. And since he's in Ottawa and only gets down here a couple times a year, I'm not worried about having to give it back anytime soon. And then Saturday, Muffin and I went hunting. He took me out to some new hunting grounds around here. I'm new to the area, and I didn't know where to hunt, so he took me out and showed me some sweet spots that Matthew and I are going to check out on Saturday.
Sweet.
Unfortunately, no game. Lots of tracks. We actually saw something kind of neat. We saw two sets of moose tracks walking side by side, and there was what appeared to be blood droplets in the snow. Like, you know, when blood hits the snow and then it kind of spreads out and disperses through the snow and kind of turns it pink. It was very subtle, but I don't know what else it could have been. It was pretty interesting.
Was it all along the way or just in one spot?
Just kind of started, then stopped again. We followed it. They were on the road, so we followed them in the Jeep along the road. And after a while, the blood kind of just stopped, but the tracks kept going. If indeed it was blood. After that, we had some vehicle problems, and by the time we got the vehicle repaired, we didn't really have enough time to make it back to the hunting spot. So we went to the range, and I shot my Remington 700, my TAC-21 chassis built thing.
Sorry to interrupt you. Was this Jason's vehicle?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah? Did it catch on fire?
No. That's so awful. It's funny.
I'll just check him.
He showed up late. He said the fan belt went, and he got it changed. He drove with basically a shoelace of a fan belt to UAP, put a new fan belt on in the parking lot at UAP, and then he was half an hour late when he got here, new fan belt, and the fan belt started to come apart again while we were in the woods. Ooh. So went and got another fan belt and inspected the pulleys a little closer and figures there was a bad bearing that he just replaced in one of the pulleys, and that was the end of our trip. So we went to the range and shot my 308 at 200 meters, knocking clay pigeons off the berm, so it was fun. And then the next day we drove to Shediac to trade my Tanfoglio Stock 3 for a STI True Bore open gun. And I've been dry firing it pretty much since then.
You really have gone completely to the dark side, haven't you?
He's completely over there now. He's gone. There's no coming back, basically.
Yeah.
So
I bet you there's no cookies either.
It was a lie.
It was a lie. There's not a cookie to be found over here. I'll talk about the gun in a second. Just get a couple more quick things out of the way. The X dies in 223 arrived. They're made by RCBS. They prevent the case from stretching. You start off by first resizing all your cases in a regular die, or you could resize them in this die too, with the mandible. It's called a mandible, right? That thing inside the die?
I think so.
Yeah. So anyway, resize them all and then trim them all to 20 thou under the maximum length, and then shoot them. And then the next time you put them through your X die, and they will stretch a little bit until they hit the edge that's machined in the mandible that prevents the brass from stretching anymore. And then, of course, you're always going to want to keep track of your brass, because your brass has been set to all be the standard length at one reloading session, and then put through this die. So what it does is it eliminates a step. So if you're always recovering your brass, next time you get it home, you just clean it and lube it and throw it into your Dillon progressive press or whatever other progressive press you're using, just like pistol die, because you don't have to resize it, then trim it. It'll just get resized, will not stretch, and then you'll go through and progressively reload.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'll let you guys know how that works once I get it up and running. I got a package from Toby. I had ordered a Samson 15-inch Evolution handguard, free-float handguard for my STI. And before it could arrive, the person who I got the 3G barrel from contacted me and said his new barrel didn't fit inside a handguard and offered me a sweet deal on the handguard that I couldn't say no. So,
so now you've got two.
Right. So this one's brand new in the box for sale.
Sold.
All right.
No, I don't know that. is it lighter than the
oh,
NEA
yeah.
one?
It yeah? sure is.
Because that's
yeah.
basically I'm looking for something for my NEA that's not as heavy, because it's a.
It's super light. It comes.
Yeah, I need to get my NEA down like 2.5 pounds.
Right.
So
well, then I wouldn't go with this one. Well, I don't know if I go with this one or not. Check out how much the new NEA handguard weighs, because I'd like to put a new NEA hand. Oh, maybe I'll put this on my NEA. Because I was really thinking about getting the new NEA handguard, because it's lighter. Obviously, it's drilled out more.
Yeah, I haven't been able to find out any information on that. How much lighter it is?
I don't know. There are some technical specs on them on SFRC's website.
Okay.
And it should be on NEAs as well. But no, it's cool. It comes with some rails, a couple of 2-inch rails, and then maybe a 3-inch rail. Anyway, it cost me $230 to get it here, but I'll sell it for $180. That's what I paid for the other one, so I'll take a bit of a loss, but I figured at that price it'll move pretty quick.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. And then I renewed my NFA insurance today. I renewed my NFA membership, and then I also picked up the liability insurance, which covers you while hunting and while doing shooting activities. If it's anything like the archery insurance, if something would happen to me, if I got a car accident on the way to an archery-related event, I would have been covered. I don't know if the NFA liability insurance is that good, but it's always nice to have a little extra liability insurance. And it was less than $10 a year. So the membership, the regular membership's $35 a year. What's $10 more, really?
Yeah, exactly.
So I threw that on there.
That's
cool.
Well,
and you know that it's going to – I mean, they're probably making a little bit on that, so you know you're supporting them.
Yep.
Again, right?
Yep. Yep. Exactly. So now finally then, real quickly, Matthew, keep an eye on my time. So
oh, you're doing all right, man.
Here, but the STI Trubor open gun that I got is in 9mm major. It's based on the modular 2011 frame, just like my STI Eagle is. The frame is steel, but the grip is polymer. Not comfortable. I got to tell you, I took it out shooting today for the first time. I only had 50 rounds. Thank you to Sales for spotting me some ammo. It hasn't left my hand very much since I got it home. And the polymer grip that comes on the gun is quite... you make fun of Glocks for being square and blocky, but there are no sharp edges on the grip of a Glock.
Block? Yeah, close
yeah,
enough to block.
Exactly. The back end of a 1911 type gun... with the grip safety and the ambidextrous safeties, and where the grip meets the frame, there's quite a few not smooth edges there, I have to tell you. It's not when you get a real nice high grip on the gun, There's some sharp edges in there, and it's not the most comfortable thing I've ever held. Grip angle, though, is that traditional 17-degree 1911 grip angle, and that works well for me. It's comfortable. I can find my sights or my red dot as soon as I lift up the gun. But this polymer grip, is like STI has their polymer grip. They have a small aluminum grip and a small, and a large aluminum grip. Now my Eagle has the large aluminum grip. So the whole bottom half of the gun is the grip. I'm not talking about grip panels. I'm talking about the bottom half of the gun. When I got the STI, I couldn't reach the mag release button, and I thought it was because the grip was too big. Turns out I have short thumbs. Insert here. So small thumbs for latte has to go with an extended magazine release, and then it was okay. I had tried the small aluminum grip on the STI Eagle. Didn't like it. Wasn't anywhere near as comfortable as the large grip. That being said, I've since put that small aluminum grip on the TruBore open gun, and it's made a big difference. I haven't shot it yet with this grip, but as far as comfort, it certainly feels a lot more natural. It's a lot more comfortable than the polymer grip, and it doesn't have the rough, jagged edges that the polymer grip has either. So I'm thinking I'm going to like it more with this gun. I had some issues. Yeah,
now, does that actually make the grip smaller than the other gun, or does it bring it down to the same size?
There's a difference between all three grips. The polymer, small aluminum, the large aluminum, none of them are the same size. The polymer is not the same size as the small aluminum. It's somewhere, I'd say, in between the two.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to see is, do you have basically a bunch of guns that have different size grips, or are they naturally, because they're different firearms, bigger or smaller, and you're just using different size grips to, make them all the same so that you have consistency through your platforms?
It's not the same, but it's more consistent now than it was before. The feel of the aluminum grip on the STI TruBore is similar to the Eagle aluminum grip than it was with the polymer grip on there.
Okay.
If I could get my hands on a large aluminum to get the same feel as my Eagle, I might do that. But the STI being chambered in 9x19, the entire firearm has a smaller overall feel to it than the Eagle. The Eagle being a 40 caliber gun is just everything is a little bit bigger and beefier.
Mm-hmm.
So. Okay. The other thing I changed on the gun was the Seymour mount. It had the traditional Seymour mount where it was held upright. I have a 90-degree mount, which puts the Seymour farther out, which I'm not really crazy about. But what it does, two things that I think is going to be beneficial. It gets the dot closer to the bore. So while shooting at targets close, I won't have to worry so much about aiming off like we do with our ARs, because the sight over bore matters when you're up close. Mm-hmm. Let's say you have a target with a no shoot in front of it. You really got to make sure that you're holding high so you don't get into the no shoot. The other thing it does is it completely moves the sight off of the top of the slide and puts it to the left of the slide. So now my ejection port is completely open. So given the fact that this is a 1911 clone, it's only a matter of time before I get some kind of stovepipe failure to eject or failure to extract. I can get in there and dig at it better. The 9x19, they run better than they did, but they still won't run as good as 38 Super. If you want an open gun, 38 Super is really the way to go if you're rich and can afford the brass.
It's good that you're planning for failure.
Well, if you get the load right, you're fine. All the guys tell you with the TruBores, when they get failures to extract, upping the power factor helps. And I mean, that's what the comp is for too. You also have to get the right amount of gas through the comp for the comp to work. The comp, there's a formula there. These things are not factory stock guns. If you want your open gun to run right, it's all about load development and recoil spring to find the right combination to get it to recoil, have a nice recoil impulse that feels well or feels good. And you also got to get the right power factor to get the comp to actually work. So if you're not putting enough gas through the comp, the gun's going to recoil all over the place like it would as if the comp's not there. So I've got a lot of learning to do and a lot of load development to work on.
This is the same as like NASCAR or racing. Mm-hmm. They're not driving these cars right off the local car lot and racing them. They're finely tuned, and they're messing around with everything to get them to perform just exactly the way they want them to perform.
And then they rebuild them after every race.
Yeah.
So there'll be some of that in this as well. It'll be constantly replacing the springs in it. Well, you know, I was replacing the springs of my Glock once a year. I put a lot of rounds through my Glock 35 every year, so I'm going to have to put more through this because this is a different animal. Everything is different. You can't get any farther away from a Glock 35 sure. than a 9mm major open gun, so it's going to be a long winter of, so this week I tried this load, so this week I tried this load, and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I know the grip is right now. I tried a titanium firing pin. I got some weak primer strikes. Needs a different spring, firing pin spring to work with the titanium firing pin. I'm looking at a different trigger bar. I'm looking at a different hammer. I'm looking at a different magwell. And I haven't even shot a match with it yet. But this is, you guys know I love to work on my guns. And I love to customize my guns. And this is the epitome of working on and customizing. So, and you know, I've said it. We've all said it. Ipsic's a game. So I figure I might as well shoot a gamer's gun. I may not like open and I may go back to my Eagle. We'll see. But I'm definitely going to try it for at least one season.
Cool.
So, yeah, that's me.
Matthew.
Yes?
You can wake up now.
Oh, here I am. Trevor, you're done talking about NASCAR?
Yeah.
He's making a left turn. Cool. No, I think you're going to have fun with that, Trevor. You certainly are into this game as a gamer, and this is the ultimate game gun for you, so I think you're going to have fun with it.
I concur.
Cool. Well, let me start off with, again, bragging how awesome my school is that I work at. So I'm browsing through the library, just keeping an eye on a couple of children. And I'm just kind of going through the aisles, just looking at different things. And lo and behold, I see the New Brunswick Museum Firearms Collection book. It's called Muzzleloaders to Machine Guns. So, of course, I'm intrigued.
There are so many firearms in our New Brunswick Museum that they had to write a book about it?
They wrote a book about it.
Doesn't get much cooler than that.
It was pretty neat. So, yeah, it says muzzleloaders to machine guns, but it's basically the first 90 pages of the 100-page book is muzzleloaders, and the last two is, like, you know, two machine guns. But
is one of them Japanese?
I don't remember. I was more into the muzzleloaders at the beginning, actually. I didn't look at the machine guns much. They were German. One was an MP44, and one was a... What was the machine gun with the mag that goes on the top?
The Bren gun.
The Bren, yeah. I think it was a Bren. So, anyway. Yeah, it was pretty neat. I mean, they started from matchlocks and went right through the ages. And, you know, it was kind of cool to see the evolution of firearms while I was working at school.
Well, I was so intrigued by this. You sent me this by text message. I got on the internet and I went to their website for the museum to see if there was any information about the collection that they had. And I did find some information about the military section, and there is a picture of the Japanese machine gun that they have there.
That's
basically
cool.
Wanted to know if it would be worthwhile to make a road trip down there.
I don't know, maybe. I'll bring the book.
Yeah, please do.
Well, I can sign it out, right?
Absolutely.
That'd be cool.
Or not, and just take it anyway, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever. We don't have a librarian at our school anymore, so they wouldn't even know. Anyhow,
I really want to hear this story about you shooting the lady's wig off.
Funny. Oh, I have written here a bag to hair, but I did actually shoot it, or I actually spelled it correctly. I didn't spell it hair. Yes, I spelled it hair. But anyway.
Funnier this way.
It is funnier this way. So Matt and I, you know, as the running joke is, we don't hunt, we walk through the woods with our guns. Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. Anyway, that's true too. So we're out. We're actually driving this last time, going through some logging trails and stuff, and some backwoods trails that were kind of longer than the average walk would take us. So we thought we'd kind of cruise through real slow in the truck, which turned out worked quite well because, sort of. We were just about done. We were probably a kilometer from where we were coming back into civilization. And as you guys know, snowshoe hares, they change colors. In the fall, spring, and summer, they're usually brown. And, of course, in the winter, they turn white to match the snow. Well, it snowed here About a week ago, I guess, and it's been kind of cold temperatures, so they've all turned white, but the problem is all that snow has since melted, and so that's kind of like...
Not a problem for us.
Not a problem for us. Problem for Snowshoe Hare, who's white, because they pretty much glow in the dark, kind of like that rabbit I got last year with Trevor. It, you know, I came around the corner, and there it was kind of glowing at me. It was kind of the same thing. We were driving along, and off to the left, we saw a snow clump running along. Well, that's strange. So we grabbed our shotguns and jumped out of the truck, and Matt kind of stayed by the truck, and I took off kind of hoping to head it off, and it turned out I did. So I'm running kind of through this old four-wheeler trail, and I come around a corner, and there's the rabbit kind of in a clearing in this thicket, and the rabbit's maybe 15 yards away and kind of hopping away from me. And so I don't know where Matt is, of course, so I holler, "Matt, where at? Where are you? I don't want to shoot you." He hollers back. He's directly across, like the rabbit is directly in between the two of us. So I'm like, "Well, this isn't going to work at all." So I hollered at him, and he took off running in a safe direction. And once he was clear, I fired at the rabbit, and the rabbit, well, being a Chuck Norris rabbit, I guess, took the full force of the 12 gauge blast, turned around and charged me. It was coming at me full speed, and I was, well, it was self-defense, so I shot it in the face.
Absolutely.
it was, when I hit it, it was just like a Hollywood movie. It jumped up on its back legs, threw its arms up over its head, and flipped onto its back.
Oh, my God.
Just like in the movies. I was like, oh, it is true. They just use rabbits and... instead of people, I guess. I don't know. But
I don't know what kind of movies you've been watching, but I need to subscribe to that station.
Anyway, it was pretty cool. So we managed to get a rabbit. So our non-bagging a game streak is over, I guess. We're now one for like a dozen. So now, sadly, we went out this afternoon again and saw nothing. So maybe it was just a fluke, but it was cool. We finally got something, and I've got a couple of rabbit legs in the freezer ready for, I don't know what I'm going to eat them with, but something, I guess. Other than that, I picked up a new shotgun, and by new, I mean probably made back in 56. Actually, probably 58. It's a Stevens 58. And I don't know if the 58 stands for the year, but it looks like it could have been. It's a 20-gauge magazine-fed bolt action.
Oh, wow.
It is neat. I've been wanting a bolt action ever since I saw this Norinco contraption that Jason Gallen shared with me quite a while ago. It's a short-barreled magazine-fed 20-gauge bolt action that has a collapsing stock. And the really neat thing is that whenever you press the button to collapse the stock, it disengages the trigger. So it makes it unfireable. So you can collapse the stock, and even though the overall length of the gun is now less than 26 inches, it remains a non-restricted firearm because it's not fireable. At least that's how it's explained to me on CGN. So I'm not sure if that's true or not, but all I know is I want one, and they're not in Canada yet. So I picked this thing up. I cut the barrel down to 18 inches and rebeaded it, and Matt and I had it out today. I was shooting in the gravel pit, and it's sweet. It's a lot of fun to shoot, and I think I'm going to have some fun with this. It'll be, if nothing else, it'll be a nice little truck gun.
How did you... You're going to hunt trucks?
I might hunt trucks. Trucks need to be hunted, too.
How did you cut down the barrel? With like a pipe cutter or a hacksaw?
A hacksaw, and then a file to square it up. I've done it a couple of times before. It takes a bit of practice. I wouldn't recommend doing it at the exact length that you want. You start off long and work your way down as you get better with practice. But, just a hacksaw and then square it off with a file, and it works just fine. Open choke, of course, because, it didn't come with a choke to begin with. It was open choke already, so I didn't feel bad about that. As a grouse gun or rabbit gun, you're not shooting out past 25 yards anyway, and I patterned it today at 25, and you can't fit a rabbit in between the holes of the pellet, so it'll be just fine.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I'm going to have some fun with that, I guess. I'll get some pictures up on Facebook later.
What's the date stamp on it?
I don't know if it has a date stamp.
It has just a letter. Is there a letter stamped on it? There is a letter stamped on it somewhere. But
58-20GA. It's a 20-gauge. It doesn't have a letter stamped after it. It is just Stevens Model 58. That's it.
Just the head of the receiver, the right side of the gun.
The head of the receiver and the right side of the gun, yeah. There's two other stamps on it. One of them is T22, and the other one is SP. Or or it could be.
So it was 1966.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
Listen to the expert here. Like you're on fire this week, Owen.
So I got a 66, a 58 made in 66. I like it.
Yeah, and 20. The number is has to do with the person who inspected it.
Oh, okay. Cool. So they just use a little roll stamp to inspect to stamp it once it's inspected. Very neat.
You've been studying.
He certainly has, and I think he has a story to share with us later on, too, doesn't he?
Padawan learner over there.
Cool. All right, well, that was it for me, so.
All right, cool. Well, we've got some upcoming events and news, T-shirt orders. How many do we have now, Trevor?
We have...
six.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Six. All right. So we're up from, what, three?
Now, that being said, that doesn't include any of us, does it? Because I would like another one if these ones are going to be done right.
Oh, well, no. Well, you're getting them done, so... Oh.
well, sign me up. I've just been voluntold.
We discussed this at Wicked Cool Graphics. You would take care of getting the next run done.
Oh, I don't recall this conversation. However, I'm in. So, yeah, I'm going to get another one. So we're at 7 because I definitely want one. Jules going to want one. That's 8.
Okay, here's what we have in stock.
One medium. It's for Jason.
I thought we had an extra large in stock, and we do, but I'm keeping it because it has long sleeves.
But I'm keeping it. So those of you who wanted it, too bad. Trevor wants it, so he gets to keep
that's
it.
That's mine. And then,
if you want a T-shirt.
Sorry, we have two more here. We have one double XL, and then we have one medium. So the medium goes to Jason Gallen. The double XL is available if any listener wants it. And then, the double XL goes to Styx. Styx has an XL and a double XL on order. So I got to remember to put Styx's name down on that one. Paul Lathrop wants an XL, and I think we should give it to him for free, and here's why. He wants to wear it at SHOT Show and have his picture taken with it at SHOT Show. So
I think that's cool.
And then we got another Paul guy who ordered a large, and then Jason Gallant's medium. So if you guys throw a couple on the order, we're ready to order these.
Cool.
Well, anybody else that wants some can send an email to trevor.furlot at nbed.
Oh,
is that written right?
No, that's all wrong. It's supposed to be my Gmail account.
Oh. He's bad at this game. It's just trevorfurlot@gmail.com.
So just send an email saying that you want a t-shirt, and we'll
Trevor will put you on the list.
We're ready to
charity order. Shoot. So upcoming news, we've got some guy named Steve Lee. I don't think most of you never heard of him, but
He's just some guy that
part of the world. And so
the upside down part.
The upside down, yeah, that's right. Rescue Gun Club, June 28th. Reserved, right?
Yep, it is reserved. Right. I created a Facebook event today that describes what we'll be doing. Same format as before. Silhouette, skeet, rifle shooting, and a mini match.
All right, and then at some point, we're not 100% sure, but aiming for the August 2nd and 3rd Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course.
And we got to thank Chris Billard for correcting us on that, because we have been calling it Paratus, which is the other company that's not Tommy Nelson's.
No, right. It's what happened was I went to Tommy's page to grab the name, and Tommy had liked Daniel Shaw's school or something like that. So I did get it off of Tommy's page, but it's not Daniel Shaw's school, it's Tommy's school.
Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course. So I'm looking forward to that. And that's 2-day defensive handgun with Mag 40 instructor Tommy Nelson of the Gun Dudes. And day two is, which I probably won't be there for, but you're going to miss out on that, meeting me. But day two, IFSC mini match featuring some of SummerSlam's best stages. And there's only a couple spots left. We're
literally a couple, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've got a couple maybes, which might open up a couple more spots, but basically we're down to two spots left. So do not hesitate. Don't wait. Get your names in now.
And in case you're wondering, we're not taking money yet. We're not going to take money until we've confirmed the dates with Tommy and the price with Tommy.
Yep.
The price is going to be between $2 and $2.50, we think. And the dates, as Owen said, but that's dependent on Tommy's vacation time.
Sure. More, I think we're going to know more in January, right? After Christmas, we'll know everything kind of for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. And what's the deal with this next one, guys?
I put that in. We should probably talk about it eventually, but we're going to be having a contest soon, and you're going to be able to win one of four packs of some U.S. Night Vision magazine wraps for full-length AR mags, and special thanks to Mike Roast. He's donated these. He's shipping them over to me, and we're going to use them as prizes. So
I'll ask the question. What are they?
Yeah, it's some sort of thing that you put on your magazine.
It's a Canadian thing. It keeps your mags warm.
That's right.
Oh,
basically.
All right. I'm in.
Yeah, it's a wrap, and apparently they're night vision proof or something, so it's hard to see them using night vision, I guess, or something. I don't know. But it's decorations for you. Well, not decorations. It's a tactical speed, high speed gear, low drag something. So I don't know if. We're going to make us up some sort of contest. We don't know what yet, but there'll be a contest, and you can win these. It'll be awesome.
Awesome.
Probably. So.
All right. So I guess we're going to have to move on to our guests now, aren't we? We've been delaying it as long as possible.
But I guess, yeah, it comes time.
Am I the only one looking forward to this?
Well, I think Luke is too.
Yeah, Luke's been sitting here very quietly, very patiently. Thank you very much for being so patient.
No problem.
You're here. Am I allowed to say what he's here for?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay. Luke is a dealer, correct? For
yes.
LHS Holsters. And you're here with us today to talk a little bit about LHS Holsters and.
I'll be right back. Yeah. I'm going to go grab mine.
Okay.
Cool. Well, let's see if we can ask the same questions Trevor's going to ask when he comes back.
That's
so
right.
First of all, what's LHS stand for?
Well, LHS, and the first time I heard this, I thought it was a joke that was being told to me. LHS actually stands for a left-hand shooter. The owner of the company and the guy that the founder of the company, Pavel, apparently he's a southpaw. And he named a company after left-hand shooters. So if anybody is wondering, can I get a left-hand holster? Well, guess what?
You can. You better be able to with a name like that.
Yeah, the company was developed for the left-hand shooter, which is something that I did not realize at first when I first got into it. I'm actually very happy to hear that because there's a lot of left-hand shooters that are looking for holsters. So hopefully they'll come to see us to get the stuff that they need.
Cool.
So what do LHS holster, like, are they tactical holsters? Are they speed holsters? Are they for specific purposes?
Okay, I'm back. You can start.
Now, moving on to the listener
feedback. Yes.
What? I missed it?
That was
15
minutes.
Shouldn't have taken that nap, man.
Man.
That's right. If Trevor can hold this holster up to the microphone so everybody can see it.
Pretty.
For what Owen was asking, yeah, there's holsters for every purpose. The more popular one that we're promoting quite a bit out of is the Rapid Draw, which is a Kydex holster that's complete covering for your competitions. So it's something that most shooters would be used to in terms of looks, but you've got a fully adjustable hanger for your belt. As well as you can do cant, you can do angle and switch sides and stuff. You've got holsters like the Falcon, and these are all available for pictures, of course, on the LHS website for anybody that needs to know what I'm talking about. The Falcon is more of a low profile holster that you would wear outside the waistband. There's also some inside the waistband holsters for the people who require concealment. There is a newly developed appendix holster for people who require concealment as well. And soon to be released, not exactly sure when, there's going to be a speed holster, which people, of course, who shoot IPSC are very used to using speed holsters.
Excellent.
So when's mine going to be in?
That was going to be something I actually would love to talk to you about today.
Okay.
The holsters, the whole ordering process of the holsters is something that's fairly new. It's been I've been playing back and forth over the last year, and we've been trying to figure out what we should bring in for stock and what we should bring in for custom orders. So the way it works is that if a person orders something that we don't have in stock, when the order goes out, it takes about a month for it to come into Canada because the holsters are made out of country.
Bulgaria,
that's right. As of last week, for any of the listeners that have ordered from me or from any of the other dealers, the holsters are supposed to arrive mid-December. Between the first and second week of December, we're supposed to receive the holsters in Canada, at which point they'll be, of course, sent out to all the dealers, and then from there we deliver. For the people who've ordered from me, I will be delivering in person to help save on shipping. Because, you know, you guys have been waiting a little while, so we want to try to make up for that and by delivering it in person. But yeah, we're looking at my personal goal is to get them to you before Christmas. And provided that the dates that we've received for shipping times are correct, that there's a very good likelihood that'll happen.
Because if my understanding is correct, they don't have, you know, like, container loads of pre-made holsters all sitting there. When the orders come in, that's when they build them. Is that right?
For the most part, that is right.
Yeah.
The holsters, for the most part, are made to order. The only reason for that is because in Canada, the dealers are all new, so nobody has tons of stock right now. Mm-hmm. We're building stock as we go, and as well as taking orders, mm-hmm. which, you know, for example, the order that you're on right now, there's probably another 10 people on my order that have stuff. Plus, I've ordered some stock for myself, so I will have some stuff. But if there's something that's required that I don't have, then there's that month wait.
So what did you order, Owen?
I ordered a sort of a outside-the-waistband tactical, the Falcon.
That's right. Yeah.
Cool.
You ordered the Falcon. You ordered probably one of the very popular ones, especially for people who are going to use, and I can imagine you using this one for three gun or for anything that's maybe less like IPSC, where you're going to have it tight into your side, where you're going to need that low profile.
Interestingly enough, I shoot IPSC that way. I shoot IPSC with a duty holster. So seriously? My gun sits, okay. Yes, my gun sits in very, very close to my side. Yeah, I mean, that's just the way I want to shoot the sport because I shoot it for practice.
Right? I tried that, but I'm too fat, so it doesn't work.
It actually is an issue when I...
Thanksgiving?
Well, no, when I'm wearing my plate carrier with three gun, then it becomes an issue. When I'm not wearing, you know, anything bulky, it's not an issue. But when I'm running it with like the three gun, I have to be, you know, very careful about how I draw. You know, it's a little harder to get hand position on my firearm. So,
yeah.
But anyway.
Cool. And another nice thing about the LHS holsters that a lot of people have been actually taking advantage of, which I was kind of surprised, is that we have a combination of colors that are available that is just immense. There's a lot of color choices that are available for the majority of our holsters. And some people have some interesting colors that they've ordered. There's a certain clone that you guys know.
Filthy wanted white and black, huh?
He's ordered something to match the theme of his outfit, let's just say. So he's gonna I'm really looking forward to actually delivering that one. We've got a friend of mine actually that's ordered a Falcon like Owen, but he's ordered his left hand to go along with the theme, with a flashlight depression, as well as a digital camo forest. So he's got the most expensive holster on the order. So you can really make this thing your own if you want it in, you know, blue, red, pink, whatever. Everything can be customized to the person. And of course, yeah.
question for you, Luke. You're talking about customizing. Oh, yeah. No, that won't work. I'm looking. I've got my Rapid Draw right now, and I've got my Eagle 5.0, and that's I ran the Rapid Draw in our last multi-gun match with my Eagle without getting – if this wouldn't have gotten to me in time, I would have been unable to run my Eagle, so I really owe you, you know, you guys and Dave a big thank you for that, because I didn't want to run it with anything other than my Eagle. Anyway, that being said, I have an RHT thumb pad or gas pedal on the side of my gun.
Okay.
And I had to remove it to get it into the holster, and I was wondering if there was a way that it could get a custom holster made that I could leave the thumb pad on. But I'm looking at it now, and it's not going to work because it interferes with the hardware.
With the hardware of the current holster that you have?
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that the race holster that will be developed soon will be a lot more low profile than the current holster you have, which is going to be something that's going to be made to fit the more open gun.
Okay, but will it still have the secure retention and ability to reholster that the Rapid one does?
Absolutely, absolutely. You need that retention. Oh, you don't have a choice. Without retention, you can't use the holster, really. I mean, what's the point of having a holster if it's just going to fall on the ground, right?
that happens in Ipswich all the time.
Yeah, it happens a couple times at the three gun.
Holster and,
yeah,
and, especially in three gun where we reholster, we need to be able to just slam it in there and know that it's not coming back out and run away.
Yeah, but you're going to run a different holster. Yeah, because you want to see if you can run a different holster for three gun than you would for Ipswich, right?
Well, I'd like to.
Yeah, but surely you're not going to run your open gun for three gun.
Oh, yeah, right. That's a good point, too. Well, you know what? Trevor might.
Yeah, he probably would, but.
Well, the guy who won the open division was running an open gun, wasn't he?
He was.
So.
Yeah, but that doesn't count.
Sure, it does. You know, my rifle's an open. My shotgun's probably.
But here's the difference, Trevor. In the real world, you're going to run an optic on your rifle. In the real world, you're not going to run an optic on your pistol.
That's right. But I'm playing a game, so I'm going to play with my game guns, right?
Okay, fair enough. I mean, if it's game three gun, yeah, I guess. But
yeah,
I guess.
Totally. Otherwise, I'd be wearing a plate carrier as well and my Glock 17.
Yep. So. Now, Luke, they getting back to LHS holsters, they also have mag holders and for both AR-15 mags and pistols, correct?
Half correct. you're right, actually. We do have mag holders, I'm sorry, for pistol mags, and the rifle mags are coming. They're in development right now. They're being distributed in Europe, but they're not in Canada just yet. They're basically just being finalized, and they will be in Canada in 2014, as far as I understand. The pistol mags, they are available. They're available in both C mags, which basically are the low profile mags, which would go along with the Falcon holster like you've purchased. And they would the A mags are the ones that would go along with the competition holsters, such as the Rapid Draw, for example.
Those ones would have the adjustable cant and all the, you know, tension for tightness and all that would mount on an Ipswich belt.
The next group will actually. The first group of AMAGs didn't have that adjustment, and Trevor, as much as he likes to complain, he was instrumental in turning that around, because I was speaking with Dave, the distributor here in Canada, and we were talking about the mags for the competition guns. And he was asking my feedback and stuff, and I said, you know what, I've been talking to a few people, and everybody likes them, but they're a little concerned about how they fit and how they sit.
Everybody likes them except for Trevor.
I didn't want to say it out loud. I put forward your concerns, and within about 2 to 3 weeks, I think they switched things around to another idea that they had had for the mounts. So the new...
Basically, they said, Trevor was right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they didn't want to admit to that. They'll never admit to that, actually. But they actually switched it around to another idea that they had for the mount for the mag pouches, which will be adjustable, such as you mentioned, which is going to make a world of difference in how they fit and sit on the belt. And, of course, they're tension adjustable as well, so you can put your mag in and really fine-tune how that thing's going to come out of your mag pouch. And as for the rifle mag holders, you're right, Owen, they are going to be available in 2014. We don't have them for order just yet, but they're going to be the R-Mags, and they're going to be coming out at some point in the new year, I'm hoping before the summer. And anybody who wants to see them, they can go on the LHS website and have a look at them. They're pretty good-looking rifle mag holders.
Cool. Now, Luke, coming back to the AMAG, that being said, they are fairly adjustable right now in some senses. As far as cant, Owen, they're totally cantable right now. You can rotate them forward or backwards. So if you're using them in IPSC and you need to reach around to that far mag at the back, just under your spine, you can cant it towards you to make the ease of withdrawal.
So you can cant it?
Yes.
You can't. Can. Wait, what?
That's a plain words there. Yeah, they're definitely can adjustable for sure. What the guys at LHS are doing right now with them is that the new mag anchors are going to be more easily adjustable. And they're also looking at height adjustability in there as well, which is going to be something that's going to be a big difference, a big game changer for some people.
For me, yeah.
That was the big thing for you. That's right. Yeah. And I can see where your point was. Myself, I do like them high, but depending on how you play the game, you may want to be able to adjust in a different spot, and that makes perfect sense.
Other than that, though, the fit and finish on them, especially the holster, I'm really happy with the quality of it. You know, when you see some Kydex stuff, it looks like it's made in somebody's barn. Owen.
Now, if you look at the Kydex holster he made for me, it doesn't look like it was made in a barn. It looks awesome.
It certainly does not. I'm just being a little facetious there, but these ones...
just, you know, a little.
Kydex is what it is. It's something that's heated and molded and wrapped around something. It's not the hardest product in the world to work with, but you can still tell that this is... the fit and finish is there. It's quality. It doesn't feel cheap. It doesn't look cheap. You don't have to worry about laying on it in the mud or in the dirt in a match. It's not going to, you know, you're going to get up, but it's still going to be there with you, not in pieces in the dirt.
Well, that's cool.
You see, Trevor, I was going to make you a holster, a Kydex holster for your AR-15, but now I'm not.
I hate myself sometimes.
All right, well, finish us up here, Luke. Where can people go to see your awesome new website, and how can they order holsters for themselves?
Well, that's easy, man, on the internet.
Yeah, that's the best place to look. Absolutely. I actually, Matt mentioned that I apparently let a spoiler through earlier. My website, which was went live yesterday, perfect timing, is called bankswitchboutique.com.
Bankswitch Boutique?
Yes.
That's an epic name.
And considering that you approved it already a month ago, you should know the name already, Trevor.
I did?
You did, yeah, because I said...
I sent you a couple... I've seen since then?
That's true. Yeah, very, very distracting. But yeah, it's called bankswitchboutique.com. The name of the company is Bankswitch Boutique. Right now, I'm working still on the website, so the products are not all there at the moment, mainly because I'm trying to figure a few things out. It's my first time doing a website, so it's a little more difficult than I thought it was at first.
So I should have just posted it to our Facebook?
You can go right ahead and post it. The nice thing about it is that if anybody needs to contact me, they will get in touch with me. And if anybody needs to contact me by email, my email address is luger9@gmail.com. And they can get a hold of me that way as well for any LHS holster needs or any of that stuff. And keep an eye on Bankswitch Boutique, because in the next few years, we'll be building it as a... niche product website. I'm looking to bring stuff that not everybody has. It's going to be aimed at the sport shooter.
Very cool. So
the big question is, and I know Matthew and Owen are dying to ask it, so I'm going to ask it first because I'm that kind of a jerk. When are you going to sponsor our show? I mean, you know, hook us all up with free swag and we'll put... No, I'm just kidding.
I know you don't roll with sponsors, which is a really strange thing because that's something I've been thinking of. But you guys don't have any sponsors.
Well, we don't have any yet. I'm just saying, like, you know, if you want, we'll talk.
I think we need to talk for sure.
You know, Jason Christensen can't own every podcast out there.
I don't have a chin beard. I don't have a face coat.
We don't think any less of you. Well, we don't think a lot less of you.
Not too much less.
Awesome. So that's great. That's awesome, Luke. We're going to put that website on the show notes, probably?
Yeah, I'll do that. It's also on Facebook. So actually, you know what? Go to Facebook, like our Facebook page, and you can
to now. We've already passed the library, guys.
Spoilers!
Sorry.
You big ruiner. You ruin everything.
I know.
So I have to ask, how did you guys pass the library? Did you, like... burned down or
no, we basically cheated.
We'll get there. Yeah, we cheated.
We'll get there though. Yeah.
All right.
Cool. So we should probably move on to some listener feedback before we run out of time here.
Well, this first one's real short. Trevor, why don't you read it?
Actually, I'm gonna take this one. Comes from a student of mine. He stumped me. Showed me a photo of a rifle that his friend has that they've been trying to identify, and I was stumped. I want to say Ross rifle. I don't know why, but anyway, I sent the photo to my co-hosts here and thinking it would stump them, but one of them is quite confident that he's got it figured out. So,
and let's just say it's not the guy who didn't know what year his gun was made in.
Yeah, there you go. So, Owen, am I right? Is there any kind of Ross rifle lineage to that thing? What did you find out? Describe it for the viewers. Hold the picture up to the mic, and then they'll become viewers.
Yes, right.
We could post that picture on Facebook, too, by the way.
It's a funny-looking rifle, and the interesting thing about it that makes it kind of a rare rifle in history is it's a straight-pull bolt-action. So it has kind of a ring on the back and a almost like a bolt lever, but not up where normally a bolt would lock in. It's near the back of the bolt, and so you just pull it straight back, and it has sort of automatic locking mechanism. I'd never actually seen a picture of one before till today, so that was kind of interesting. But that was what tipped me off. When I saw that, I was like, okay, this is different. And do you want me to just tell you what it is?
Yes.
Okay. It's Swiss-made, I believe. It's a Swiss-made Schmidt-Rubin, 1889.
That's old stuff.
It's old. Now, it was made kind of in that era, and there was a lot of modifications done to it up through kind of World War One, sort of into World War Two, and I think the one that I saw that you showed me the picture of one of your students, that's been bubbed quite seriously.
It looks like the stock and barrel's been cut, huh?
Yes, definitely not. I would even say it's maybe not original stock. Didn't appear to be a magazine in it, but you showed me those other pictures that you sent me, and there is a magazine well, which you couldn't see from the first picture.
Yeah.
And the reason I think it's this model, other than some of the other models, is that position of the magazine well, as well as the front sight. I say front sight, it's actually a rear sight, which is out in front. It's not near the back. It's kind of out in front of the bolt. And I'm not sure how they shoot this because where the front sight should be out near the end of the barrel's been cut off quite a bit short. This was a long rifle in its day. Came with a 12-round magazine, detachable magazine.
What caliber?
It's a 7.5 by 55.
Oh, okay. Nice and obscure. So that's something you can just pick up a Canadian Tire then, basically.
Actually, you can buy rounds for it still. You actually can buy hunting rounds for it because it went through a bunch of different kind of variations, you know, as it, you know, they tweaked things and made it better. The famous K31 is a kind of a variation of this. Let me see here. I got some of the stuff written down. It was the first in the series of Schmidt-Rubin rifles, which served Switzerland from 1889 to 1953.
Oh, that's a long run.
Yeah.
Be almost as long as the Lee Enfield.
Yeah. Rifle takes its name from the designer of its action, which was Colonel Rudolf Schmid, and the designer of its ammunition, Colonel Edward Rubin. So production of the rifle began in 1891. And this rifle was the first straight-pull bolt-action service rifle of any nation. The straight-pull bolt-action allows the user to pull the bolt straight back to unlock the action and eject the spent cartridge in one motion. So it's fairly fast. A lot of people say that it's fast, but it was more prone to being finicky, like it's, you know, because it...
more moving, you know, parts, right?
Yeah, and if you had dirt in the action or something, it wouldn't lock forward.
That'd be great to, you know, fire off a full-powered load without your bolt locked.
Yeah.
Sounds safe to me.
It's funny you mentioned the Ross rifle, which was Canadian. It was a straight pullback, a straight pull action.
But in World War I,
in World War I, they replaced it with the Lee Enfield later on in the war because of that, because it was so finicky, and in the trenches of France with mud and, you know, all the crap getting in it, they had a lot of issues and guys getting killed because all of a sudden their rifles didn't work.
Well, yeah, and you can also reassemble a Ross incorrectly and have it fire out a battery, like basically slam fire.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like a slam fire? Sweet!
Imagine.
Worse slam fire? Oh, wait.
The rifle is roughly musket length with a free-floating barrel, so that's one way they were able to cut, you know, put a new stock on it.
But did it come with free-floating scope lenses?
Most likely not.
If I got my hands on it, it would have.
12-round magazine and wood stock that extends almost to the tip of the barrel. It was an advanced weapon for its time. And was one of the first rifles to use a copper, to use copper jacketed ammunition as its standard ammunition.
Hmm.
So ammunition went through several kind of changes over time as they developed it. Strange, it's basically similar to a 308. It's quite close. Strangely enough, the round was paper patched, meaning that the bullet was surrounded by a piece of paper, and supposed to aid in lubrication, I guess.
Hmm.
And later they developed it without paper patching, and it was eventually replaced by successor models, including the model 1896, the model, oddly enough, 1911. I thought maybe that's why they gave it to you, showed it to you, Trevor. and model 1911 carbine and the famous K31. I was able to find a lot of information on the K31.
But you're not going to share that all with us right now, are you?
No, we're not. We're not going to go into all that. But anyway, I'm not. I mean, because of the changes, you couldn't look at it and go, "Oh yeah, it matches this picture." But boy,
but you could tell by the action.
By the action, looks identical. The where the rear sight is, the distance in front of the trigger guard, the magazine well is. As they modified this rifle, the magazine got closer and closer and closer to the trigger guard. Well, it was just this early. That was what tipped me off that it must be this early one because it's so far out in front of the trigger guard.
I'm really impressed, Owen, because let's face it, Matthew and I, we put no time into this.
Zero time at all, basically. Well, no, that's not true. I actually went to the library and flipped through that New Brunswick Museum firearms book.
But not for this.
Yes, for this.
Sure. Oh, really?
I was like, I wonder if it's in there, because that'd be hilarious. So I went and looked through, but no, it wasn't.
So all I did to help my student was pass the buck on you guys. So that's awesome.
Very good.
The interesting thing is I believe, and I saw this number, I don't see it in front of me now, there was, here it was, total production was 212,000.
Oh. Hmm.
So, anyway.
Cool.
Well, thank you very much for that.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Matt, do you want to read this next one?
Sure. It comes to us from Des Scribbler on CGN and GOC. He writes, "Hi guys, love your show. Found your show through CRR and have been playing catch up for the last month, listening to all your past shows. Anyway, I'm thinking about a couple of new guns and was hoping you might be able to provide an opinion on whether or not they would be worthwhile. I'm thinking about the Kel-Tec RFB as a compact hunting rifle. I like the bullpup design, and with the RFB being a non-restricted bullpup chambered in 308, it should make for a decent hunting gun. Have any of you used or handled this model, and if so, what are your views or recommendations on it? Second, I've been seriously considering the JR Carbine in 9mm as a small game hunting/home defense option. Non-restricted and chambered in the most popular round used by law enforcement, not to mention the Glock mags, are a bonus. Any input would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. Des Scribbler on CGN and GOC. So, Trevor, I believe you have actually handled an RFB and perhaps even shot one. Is that true?
That's correct. I've handled both these firearms in question, and I've shot both these firearms in question.
So we will defer to your superior verbiage.
Well, I don't know if it's superior, but...
well, it's verbiage.
I get this one by default. the RFB is, in my opinion, not like the other Kel-Tec rifles that I have owned. I've often said it's a Kel-Tec, but doesn't feel like a Kel-Tec. I would.
That's a good thing, by the way, for those of you who don't know Trevor's previous history with Kel-Tec firearms. It's a good thing.
I like it. I would own one, especially as a lightweight compact hunting rifle. I think it's great. You'd have to find the best ammunition possible for it if you want to use it for hunting, maybe even make your own loads for it. Easy to take down, easy to maintain. I have no hesitation whatsoever recommending this for a hunting gun. Don't expect the same kind of accuracy, however, that you would get out of a 22-inch barreled Savage or even Remington 700. But if you're just trying to take down some moose or some deer, out to maybe 200 or so, no problem whatsoever. I'd be very comfortable using it for that myself. As far as the JR carbine, great gun. I don't know of any reliability issues with, people that have them. It's not quite as compact as the Sub 2000 was. But for a home defense, yeah, get some decent ammunition that's suitable for that sort of purpose. Try it through the gun, make sure it's reliable and reasonably accurate, and I don't think you'll have any problems there either. You raise good points. It's 9mm, takes Glock mags.
Now, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but let the listeners know. The JR carbine is the carbine that looks a lot like an AR, right? The mags go in front of the trigger. It's not the Kel-Tec...
it's not in the grip, no.
Sub 2000 type thing. Okay.
No, it's not the Thuron. The Thuron Defense and the JR carbine are quite similar in appearance.
Okay.
The JR carbine seems to be getting the nod as the more popular. Maybe it's because it's readily available. I don't know, but both good guns, in my opinion.
Cool. Awesome. Great. Awesome. All right.
I guess I'll read this next one. From Thomas says, "Hi Matt." I guess it's addressed to you. So.
Hi Thomas. How you doing?
Stop by, say hi.
He says, "Well, the accuracy testing on my new Savage Access 270 was a little disappointing. At first, shooting the new 130 grain Hornady whitetail cartridges produced a dismal 3-inch group, and the Remington 130 grain was a little better at 2.5-inch groups. Needless to say, I was extremely disappointed with the Access performance. I used my Predator rifle rest to steady the gun. What I should have brought with some straps and bungee cords to strap this fracker down to the bench. The stupid rifle was literally jumping.
I edited that.
Yes, I noticed that.
The stupid rifle was literally jumping up and out of the rest with each shot because it was so light. I was getting pretty good at catching it after each shot. You really had to keep a solid hold and cheek weld if you wanted to keep the gun from jumping out of the rest. The stock is a POC, very flexible and light. This pistol grip is very short, and so is its length of pull. Great for a smaller person, not so great for a 6'2" person. But there is still hope out there for us yet. Boyd Stocks is now making aftermarket stocks for the Savage Axis. On my second trip to the range, I decided to use my Harris bipod to steady the rifle this time. I also bought a box of Winchester 130 Super X cartridges to try. Things went much better this time out. The Winchester stuff produced consistent three-round groups. Now I was beginning to like this Savage, so the gun can shoot decent groups. Now I just need a solid stock and some hand loads so I can see what kind of accuracy this gun is really capable of. Would I recommend this gun to somebody? Yes and no. If you have the money to buy more gun with a better stock and a better trigger, then spend the money. If you cannot afford more gun, then the Axis is the best bang for the buck out there. It's accurate, inexpensive, and it works. P.S. The Axis mags suck, too." It's from Thomas.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I would come to the same conclusions as you, Thomas. The stock is a piece of crap. You're right. It is very light. Where the pistol grip meets the rest of the stock, it's very thin. It flexes in there whenever you're shooting it from a bench. But that being said, this is not a bench rifle. This is a hunting rifle, and the stock flex does not come into play when you're shooting it offhand or even just kind of leaned up against a tree. So, you're right. You feed it the right ammo, and I see you're getting sub MOA groups, less than an inch at 100, which is fantastic. With some hand loads, you're probably going to get that down to half. It's a good gun. It's a good gun for the money, but like you said, if you can afford a better one, I just get a better one.
I mean, that's what always needs to be pointed out, and I always try to point that out to people when they're asking me about the Axis, is you got those, you know, that kind of accuracy with hand loads.
Yes. Now, yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, that being said, he just got less than an inch with factory, and I can get less than an inch with factory as well.
Oh,
which
you
is,
can. Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, but I get less than half of an inch with hand loads. So, right. You know, hand loading really does improve your consistency.
And nothing fancy either. We're not talking about high-end bullets here. We're talking about a Hornady 55-grain soft point bullet, 24 grain or 25 grains of powder and a little bit of crimp with miscellaneous brass and whatever primer he's got his hands on.
Yeah.
So you can't
you can't slam it, but you know, at the same time though, he's right. It's not a high-end rifle at all. It is definitely a budget rifle that gives you mid-range to high range results if you do your part. But yeah, if you got a couple thousand dollars laying around and you want to pick up a really nice hunting rifle, don't get an Axis. That would be silly. Get a real rifle.
even what's the next one up? Model 11?
Yeah, the 11s are fantastic. Those in the 110s and the 111s and yep.
You can put a Savage Axis up against a Remington 700 SPS, and you can't compare the value there. You're paying a lot more for that Remington 700, and I don't think you're getting a lot more rifle.
No, yeah. I mean, in that situation, you're better off buying the Axis and putting good glass on it.
Yep.
Yep.
You know.
Cool.
So.
All right. Well, thanks for writing in, Thomas. I was really interested to hear how you made out with that, and I'm glad that you're getting good results.
Indeed.
Yep. Let us know if you get one of those Boyd stocks and how it works out for you.
So, Trevor, your turn.
This comes to us from Mike, and Mike says, "Hey, guys, so I guess this is a re-add me to the list for the t-shirts, XL, if you could. Also, I just want to make sure I'm still on the list for Tommy's course in August. I'm assuming I am, but since I'm sending this email anyway, I figured I'd be paranoid and make sure. Thanks a bunch, guys." And, Mike, that paranoia was not unfounded. You were not on the list. I don't know.
but you are now.
You are now, and just in the nick of time. If everybody that's on the list commits, you'll be the 10th person. So,
yep. I mean, it was so close. Trevor was about to call the NSA, you know, to get a copy of any emails you might have sent in the last couple months just to double check that he hadn't missed it.
They told me I could get them too.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Cool. Should I just keep going then with the best iTunes review?
Yeah, why don't you?
All right. So this one, again, is off of our American feed here. And it comes to us from a fellow podcaster. You may recognize who he is by his handle. This is Our Brothers to the North, 5-star review by Sticks and Stones, 1965. I can only surmise that's his date of birth. And he says, "The show is young, but these guys are not noobs. Love the show and the interaction that I have with them, even though I still can't get the shipping costs, quote, from them on shirts."
We don't tell you that until after we send them out. Oh, and by the way, could you send us $20 for shipping?
Yeah. One of them is old and forgetful. The other is seemingly busy. And the other one is off somewhere firing off warning shots.
Hunting rocks, if you will.
In all seriousness, it's a great show on the top of my list. They're full of great information and full of so give them a listen. You won't regret it. Sticks.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, see, Trevor, if you would know, if I had known this, you could have just given me the T-shirt, and I could have mailed it from the States.
I'm old and forgetful, and you're busy.
Yeah.
And I'm out in the woods firing warning shots, so leave me alone.
Go. So we still want, you know, 5-star reviews on both feeds, but we will get caught up with our American feed. So if you're leaving reviews on the Canadian feed and we haven't gotten to them yet, that's because, you know, we don't want to snub our brothers to the south. So.
Mm-hmm. And shout-outs. Any shout-outs?
Well, to Sticks Crazy German, apparently. She deserves a shout-out for some reason. Sticks was saying that she listens and that she's a crazy German. And so we want to keep the crazy Germans happy. So here's a shout-out to you.
Indeed. And I've got one to Paul Lathrop for pushing our likes over the top.
There we go. And finally.
Thank you very much for getting it done.
Oh.
Apparently we couldn't.
We are now beating the Edmonton Public Library in likes on Facebook.
Crushing, I believe, is the...
Is crushing the right word?
I think so. Ask Jewel if we're crushing them.
Jewel's in here glaring at me. She looks like a bull ready to charge, and I'm wearing a red shirt. That's dangerous.
Uh-oh, you're going to die anyway.
I'm going to die anyway because I got the red shirt on. But yeah, I guess we're at 290 and counting, and they're down at like... She just mouthed something inappropriately to me, but they're down at like 260-something, I think.
Do you know that some of our quote-unquote friends actually went over and liked that page?
Yeah, well, they're, like you said, quote-unquote.
Yeah. Just for the record, I've never liked it. It just seemed to defeat the purpose.
Yeah. I was that night that... Well, I don't know when he exactly posted. Paul posted or told people to go like it, but I was online for a while that night, and I just notification after notification. It was just snowballing like crazy. Yeah.
So-and-so and six more people like Slamfire Radio.
Exactly. So, we should talk about our big news.
You're pregnant.
Again? Yes.
Again.
Congratulations. You're a boy.
You're a boy.
Yeah. Yeah, we, as in Slamfire Radio, we are now a member of the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network.
That's how you pronounce it.
Yes.
Better you than me, because I would have messed that up.
Yeah, also known as the WRVO Radio Network.
That I could have handled.
WRVO?
Well, it's W because it's radio. They all start with W's, and then RVO for Reno Viola Outdoors.
Yeah. That's right. WKRP in Cincinnati started with a W.
That's right.
So that's found at www.renoviolaoutdoors.com. So you'll probably have a link to there in the show notes as well.
Yeah. There's that one. Or you can also just go to WRVO Radio, and that works too. But anyway, whatever. Google it if you have to. We're there.
Very nice website. Looks way too professional to have anything to do with us.
Right.
But here we are. Two members.
Yeah, that's awesome. So on that website, you can listen live to dozens of Canadian-based outdoors podcasts. So not just gun stuff. You've got fishing, to scuba diving, to boating, and
Yeah, we're actually the first firearms podcast on their network.
Breaking new ground.
I think there might have been one that had some hunting in it as well, but where ours is dedicated to firearms, I believe ours is the first one there, so...
There was, I forget the exact name of the show, something Redneck, and the first episode I listened to, they were interviewing Tony Bernardo. And
nice.
Say stuff, yeah.
I think it's called The Politically Incorrect Redneck.
That was it.
Yeah, because it's right there in the show notes, Trev. Thanks for reading.
Pretty much.
I'm on Facebook.
That's how I sound so smart, Matthew. Don't give it away.
Oh, right, sorry. Yeah, keep up your great spiel here, Owen.
So, and also... Everybody needs to remember we're on the Crusader Podcast Network, which features a baker's dozen of great American and Canadian pro gun podcasts. And there's tons of great material on all of those. So
yeah, it's literally a big, there's 13. There are 13 on the Crusader Podcast Network. That joke came from because I said there are dozens on the other one, but Owen didn't read that part apparently. So anyway.
Yes, I did.
Did you? Oh.
Yeah.
I'm just not very good at listening, I guess.
You are a bad human
being. I kind of... See, I worked it in. I didn't want to read it as you wrote it. So
right.
I, I kind
because
of
that would then it would flow naturally if you did that. Yeah. And we wouldn't want that to happen.
I'm sorry, Luke. Wow. I'm sorry.
It's okay. That's okay.
Sorry. I can't believe he's still here. Yeah.
I'm sitting in a hotel room by myself. I got nothing else to do.
Yeah. Okay. Right, yeah.
Drink scotch and put up with us.
Yep. Yep.
And yeah.
Cool. So I guess besides that, we should tell our listeners to join the National Firearms Associations like Trevor just redid.
Yes, I think that would be appropriate. The CSSA and the NFA. And
did we do check the us thing out about
GOC? And
there it is.
We no longer have to go like our Facebook page.
Because we already beat the library, so it don't matter
library.
No more.
Yep.
So. As a matter of fact, you could unlike us. No, I'm just kidding.
No, keep liking us. It's cool. And it helps grow our web presence there and gets new listeners. And with new listeners, hopefully comes new shooters, new firearms owners in Canada. And we need that. We are not in a dying sport, for sure. Our sport is thriving and doing well. But, you know, there's strength in numbers, and we need more shooters. We need this to be normal. We need shooting sports. I don't think we'll ever get as popular as baseball, but we need to be striving for that, though. We need guns to be like a household item, a household name, where it's no longer taboo to talk about it. It's not taboo to go to work and say, yes, I went to the range on the weekend and I shot. Well, what for? Well, just for fun, you know, and we want people to understand that. This is not, you know, a bad sport to be in. It's no longer the hush-hush, you know, stay in your closet. Oh, it's horrible. I've got guns, you know.
Preach it, bro.
Sorry. My soapbox there got a little tall, didn't it?
You'd think this was a pro-gun podcast.
You'd think it was. And it is. Guns are awesome. So go out and shoot some.
And then
stuff like rocks.
Take somebody shooting. When you do that, take somebody shooting.
Take someone with you.
Luke, I have to say, man, thank you for joining us. It was really good having you, and I'm looking forward to seeing Owen's holster because that will determine whether or not I order one of my own.
And you know what, Matt? I checked tonight before the show to just make sure that we actually have Ruger SR9 holsters that we can make.
Sweet! I'm in!
Not sure.
No, he checked. He didn't say they had them.
Right. No, you can make them.
We can make them. I still don't know about the
magnet. Why would you? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if he wants it, right?
I want one for my 2011 STI Eagle with the gas pedal on it.
We can probably work that out.
All right, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I love the one I have now.
And thank you very much for having me on, guys. I've actually been a listener for several years since you guys started with CRR, and then when Owen went on with the Warriors podcast. Really, really happy to be on the show with you, and thank you very much for the exposure and everything else.
Yeah, thank you very much for winning that rifle.
Hey, you know what? I still didn't get to shoot yours.
You don't need to.
You didn't much.
No, there's no.
That's like saying I've dated your pretty sister. Now I want the one with the gimpy leg.
Yeah, it's.
I just want to know if the mags I sent you work well.
They do, actually.
Yeah. They do? Okay.
Yep, cool. They work great. Well, we've got about 13 seconds left, guys.
Goodbye.
For those of you who are wondering why we're so fickle about our timing now, because we're on the WRVO radio network, we need to keep our shows to 90 minutes. So look forward to some regularity.
Goodbye.
So, Trevor,
take somebody shooting.
See you next week, guys.
Goodbye.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to another exciting and tintillating episode of Slam Fire Radio.
Tintillating? Really tintillating? Really? It's a dark episode, this one, is it?
Tantillating.
Oh, no, it's titillating, Owen. Actually.
Titillating?
Yeah. So there we go. PG-13 right off the bat, folks.
Right. Well, I didn't say titillating.
Well, no. Yeah. It's not even a bad word. It's just, whatever. It just sounds like another bad word.
I don't think any of us pronounced it correctly.
Probably not. No. Peter, if you could send us a soundbite.
I will change it. We're going to start over.
Ah, outtake.
Well, you ruined it. I've got a whole line, guys, and then you cut me off. And I can't even finish it.
It is titillating, so. Or tantalizing.
You kind of combined the two.
I'm sorry. You want to try that again, Owen?
Not really.
I'm going to go to bed now.
He tries to be enthusiastic. We shut him down. He takes it too seriously. We shut him down.
We're the crabs. We're the crabs that pull him back into the pot. Wait, okay. We're not talking about crabs either, huh?
Nope.
My bad. Sorry, Owen. All right. Whenever you're ready.
Are you ready?